everyone. My name is Emily Escorcia. I'm your host, and you guys are tuned in to Talk About It. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning back in. As always, I'm Emmy, and I wanted to wish you guys a happy early Valentine's Day if you're a lovebird like me, and if you're someone who hates Valentine's Day. I wanted to remind you that it's not just about romantic love. You can show your friends a lot of love, your family, and maybe even some pets. I actually love Valentine's Day because my parents used to give me little knickknacks every year, and my mom, if she still gets the chance, she'll make me heart-shaped pancakes for Valentine's Day. I love Valentine's Day, and I'm going to go ahead and spread that love to you guys to start the podcast off, because I do want to remind you guys that although grief is a heavier topic, I don't want this episode to be heavy at all. I want it to be super lighthearted and give you guys lots of hope, because grief is already hard enough. I'm going to be taking the matter very seriously and go into depth about the details of my own grief and the different types of grief I've experienced firsthand. But today we're also going to specify ways that I can help you battle that with self-compassion specifically, because the hardest thing is pulling yourself back up out of those dark situations. And I want you guys to know that it's totally possible and you can do it at any point in your life. And grief is defined as deep sorrow, misery, and usually regarding the death of someone else. But I would argue that you would have to grieve a lot of different things in your life. It's not just about dying. Yes, you most certainly do grieve when someone dies, but you can also grieve a relationship, the loss of a job, and recovering from abuse. There's different types of grief. Worse still, when you're not the one grieving and you have to help someone who's grieving and you're not sure how. Remember that grief is different for each person. He grieved something differently than I did, and it is understandable for someone not to want to share certain things. I'm obviously more of a sharer, and that's why I'm here today. I really hope that putting my story out there for you guys is going to help you in some way. I believe that I've recovered as fully as you can from grief, and I think what that means is learning your own coping mechanisms. It's not like there's a finish line. They say that acceptance is the last level of grief, and I call bullshit, because yeah, you accept the person's gone, or the job is gone, or the abuse is gone, or the unborn child is gone, but really, the feelings are always there, the memories are always there, my heart still feels things. But when you know what your triggers are, when you know how to self-soothe, when you know how to speak to the people in your circle about how to better be there for you, that's what healing from grief is. It's not a miracle cure, but it is steps in the right direction to get you feeling like, okay, I can live again happily, peacefully, with lots of love in my heart. There is, I guess, a saying or an old story. It could be fake, but my therapist, she used to tell me that there was this gentleman who lost his high school sweetheart and young daughter in a fire. And he went to go visit monks after years and years and years of trying to find ways to cope from his grief. And the monks told them, "You have all this love for these people that are gone. You love them so much, and that's why it hurts you. But it's not because there's something missing. It's because you have so much love to give and you don't know where to put it. You got to put it back in yourself. That's the only way to move forward." Actually, let's backtrack a little bit. What's my story? Why do I know what the fuck I'm talking about, right? Well, I'm 28 years old, and I think I have been to about as many funerals of loved ones as I have years of life on this earth. And that's not an accomplishment I say proudly because I want to shine or gloat. I say that proudly because it was a kick in the ass. 28 kicks in the ass. And you got to get up. You got to remind yourself to get back up. Now, some of them more important than others, I would argue. Maybe important's not the right word, but close in relationship. But I had 3 major losses recently. I've had very many that I've been exposed to, and we'll dive into that later, but 3 in my life personally that have affected me, and they've all been within the past 5 years or so. And the first one was my grandfather. He died in 2016, and he died from really old age. He was about to be 90. He had diabetes. He had cancer. He had all kinds of issues. He had already amputated a part of his toe because of the diabetes. He had smoked most of his life. He drank a lot of his life. And it was one of those things where I jokingly call him Superman because I told him he was very hard to kill. And it was true. He was 80-something and really just kicking it, like telling stories, joking, could still have whiskey every once in a while, and able walking, you know, still joliendo, like we say. And he ended up in the hospital, of course. Old age, it gets you, and diabetes definitely gets you. And slowly but surely, he got sicker and sicker, and, you know, time comes. And that one was very preparative for me. I've had deaths before his, and it was one of those, like, yeah, old people die. And yeah, they do. They do. And that is something to accept. And we can see that with admiration and clarity and say, yeah, old people die. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with getting to an old age and dying. But now we get to the tricky part. I still have to grieve him. I miss him. It's my grandfather. He loved me. He was there for me. He was there for my family. Worse, he was closer to people in my family than me. And so I felt really strong, actually. I felt like the rock of the family in that moment because I had to cradle my mom in my lap one morning. I caught her, you know, scream crying. And it was one of those moments where I was like, whoa, oh my God, wow, that's what grief is. That's what it really looks like. And I, of course, like as a good daughter, loving daughter, I love my family. I ran to her and I was there for her very gladly. So I cried with her and we went through it together. But I got her past that moment. But that's just one moment. There were hundreds that I didn't see of my mom behind closed doors and I had no idea. You know, and until it's really someone really that close to you, like your father or your best friend or something, you don't get it. You kind of get it. You get the idea. It kind of paints a picture, but you don't get it. 6 months later, I'm still kind of, hey, I miss Bebo. That's what my grandfather's called. And I, you know, still taking jackets of his and wearing them around the house and, you know, looking at his slippers and being like, oh, but 6 months after he passed away, I get the worst phone call. Well, second worst. And it was one of my very good friends, Emilio. Hey, Diaz is gone. I said, what do you mean? He's like, you know what I mean. And I don't know what else to say. And I'm like, okay, I'll call you later. And for those of you that know AD, Alex Diaz, whatever you want to call him, Diaz, call him my best friend. And he was one of my very best friends in high school. We ended up actually going to college together, played sports together, always smiling, always laughing, always giggling, always joliendo, like just being annoying, but you loved him. Long story short, we kind of distanced ourselves in adulthood, and I get that phone call. I haven't spoken to Alex in over a year because of some stupid fight that we had when we left college. And I didn't know what to do. I felt like I felt like I had been in an accident. I felt like I had just come into this crazy shock. And I was like, what the fuck do you mean? We're not indestructible? He's in his 20s. I think he was 25 at the time, or was it just turned 25. I was like, what is happening? What is going on? What do you mean Alex is gone? What do you mean I can never speak to him again? What do you mean? Like, that feeling of complete confusion, I feel like that's a second level of grief that everybody kind of has to have, that respect for death of shock. And what do you do in those moments when it's unexpected? Frankly, you kind of have to scramble for the people around you who will understand your shock and not judge you for that shock. They're not family. They're not your partner. They're not your brother. None of that. And it's still really painful. Kind of runs a chill through your veins, realizing that me and him are 6 days apart. We used to have birthday parties together on purpose because it was easier. And he's gone. And that's just how life works sometimes. The people that you don't expect to go anywhere, they sometimes leave us. The jobs that you never thought you were going to lose, sometimes you're let go. Pandemic hits and, you know, shit hits the fan. What then? That's where shock sets in. And what happened to me, I apparently felt the rollover grief of every other death that I realized was sudden. 10 other funerals that I had been to at that time. I was like, all those people, they lost their best friend, they lost their mom, they lost their dad, they lost their grandma, they lost someone they loved. And I was like, whoa. And I don't mean to have that sound so dark, but it's just the reality that they're gone. And what now? So I kind of fell into a little depression for a few days, wouldn't eat, wouldn't sleep, wouldn't do anything, wouldn't come out of my room. And finally, my mom comes into my room. So I was in Miami at the time. She looks at me and she was like, I don't think he'd be very happy to see you like this. He would understand that, yes, he's gone, but life goes on. And it was a harsh truth. Might have thrown a pillow at her or something at the time. But I needed that. Death kind of happens whenever it decides it's going to happen, and you don't get to decide and you don't get to prepare. And that kind of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God of it, that's what hits you when you face that sudden death level. We kind of get into panic mode, and a lot of anxiety lives here, and that's understandable. It has a place. Death is a little scary, but it's also very humbling and liberating to know that we all lose something. Breakups happen. We all lose jobs. We all have to bounce back at one point or another. And that's really a unifying factor. Not because, oh, so-and-so has it harder than you, because no. First of all, it's fucked up. Don't say that to people, especially when they're grieving. If you're listening and you have someone who's grieving in your life and you start saying, oh, feel better because you're not dying of starvation in Africa. No, that's fucked up. They still have every right to feel bad. Give them their space for like a second. But you can definitely say, yeah, it is really hard. Lots of people have to go through this, and I'm here for you. And is there anything I can help you with to make you feel understood, heard, like you have somewhere to come and cry if you feel the need? And even if it's in your own bedroom, just remind yourself, like, we all have to go through it. And it gets easier with your own help for yourself. I'm not going to say it gets easier with time, because time doesn't heal it. It's you investing that time back into yourself and your sanity. And that's really how you get to the light at the end of the tunnel. And when you start to accept that, that's when you kind of see that light. And so here's where I kind of went into the unhealthy coping mechanism. I drank a lot. I partied a lot. I did things I shouldn't have. And I was, you know, just trying to avoid the pain. I was like, I can't deal with the fact that I'm going to die eventually. Everyone I love is going to die. And I can't. And then somewhere along those lines were the 10 other funerals. And it was like, oh my God, oh my God, it really never ends. But at every funeral, and even at Alex's funeral, there was someone who was like, I'm so glad you're here to pay tribute to this person because he deserves that love back to them. And it's that idea of energy shift where, yeah, you're also kind of celebrating their life. I had an ex who, his background is Irish. And if you know anything about Irish funerals, really, you just get drunk and party and you celebrate that person's life. And I was celebrating my ex's grandma passing. And it was so weird to me to celebrate someone dying. But it taught me a really big lesson where they live such a great life. They are such a good energy. Alex's energy was bright and happy and still is. But it's just not here with us. It's somewhere else, if you believe in that kind of thing. And that's kind of relieving also, if you believe in any of that. If you don't, that can also be a sense of relief as well. The idea that you rest, you actually rest at the end of your life, that's kind of beautiful. Now, fast forward, my life has continued. I'm growing into my adulthood and starting my career, doing all the things. About a year and a half goes after Alex passes. I went to a few other funerals, gained a different type of respect for death, and slowly but surely started learning more about mental health. And then we get the real worst phone call. We're in Orlando. We live in Miami. For those of you that don't know, it's like a 4-hour drive, 3-hour drive if you're landing. And we get to Orlando. We had just gotten to the park, start celebrating. It was for Labor Day weekend, I believe. I get a phone call and it's my mom. And I can hear from her tone exactly what it is. And if you know my father, if you don't, it's fine. We are twins. But not only are we twins, I genuinely believe I was some sort of carbon copy of his soul. I think he's my soulmate. I believe that soulmates are more than just romantic. And I believe my father was definitely my soulmate. And so as soon as I picked up that phone, and even before the phone rang, I was telling Landon, something's off. Something's just not right. I don't feel right. I gave it to Landon knowing it was going to be something difficult. Anyways, he gets the news and I end up having to deal with that initial shock 4 hours away from my family. He has to walk me through an amusement park in that state and get me back home. He needs to make sure I don't pass out, vomit, end up in the hospital or an insane asylum before getting there. You completely feel like you had your heart ripped out, your gut ripped out. It's gone. Like you're a shell. And that level? Oh, honey, that is hard, dark, scary, real. And for anyone around you, absolutely terrifying. I didn't know what was up, what was down, what was real, what was fake, if I was going to wake up and somebody was going to tell me something different. And you're in this, obviously, state of shock and denial and whatever, all the stuff, all the stages that everybody says, the stages of grief. It's not a recipe. I can attribute it to cakes. Yeah, each cake has a recipe, sure, but there's thousands of different flavors and types of cakes, and they all taste pretty good. They all work out fine. You might still burn it, and that's really up to you. Each individual cake maker is the one who's going to successfully get through their own grief. That's it. That's why this is really just me sharing my tips and tricks that I went through, but your individual story is going to be different. Each grief is different. Each loss is different. Now, as I mentioned, I had dealt with losses along the way. Some of them got the best of me, some of them did not. But this one in particular, very obviously, took a big wind out of me, more than I expected. I had dealt with a lot mentally throughout my life, and even my family has been through a good amount of, you know, ups and downs. And I knew that there was suffering out in the world. I knew that there was suffering in my family in general. But looking at the people who I loved the most in the world, suffering in the same level that I was suffering, without being able to help them at all, was really eye-opening. And not for lack of wanting to. Of course you want to. You wake up and the first thing you want to do is sleep. Really. The first thing you want to do is try and get yourself out of bed. And it's hard. It's hard. It's so hard. Oh my God. Convincing yourself that it's worth continuing and that you will be happy again. And that is, oof, that's one lesson that is very hard to get through, but I'm going to get you there. I promise. The first thing to remember is that it's not going to be easy, but you've totally got this. No matter what you've lost at this point, you will get through this. Even if you feel like you are drowning in bills and overwhelmed and your kids are screaming and Emily, you're talking out of your ass. You don't know what you're saying. How do you know that my problems are going to be resolved? Because all of your problems, for the most part, are going to be human. Human nature, human issues, human problems. And what that means is that you are perfectly equipped to knock it out of the park. And it looks differently for every single person. I recovered in like 11 months. Some people recover in 2. Some people recover in like 3 years. It doesn't matter. Just go at your own pace. Have your own self-respect and self-compassion in mind, because the worst thing you can do in the moment where you are at your darkest is turn to people who don't love you, including yourself. If you look at yourself and talk to yourself in a way that isn't loving, you will further push yourself into the dark spiral. And so, step one, talk nice to yourself. Look in the mirror. You've got this. I know you do. I know it's going to be tough. Today is one day of a long road, and every road takes a certain number of steps. One step at a time. Baby steps. Crawl if you have to, but just get moving forward. The things that I would tell myself were, you can be happy. You can take moments of grief, respect his memory, and also love yourself. But most importantly, you deserve to be here. Remember to choose words that are empowering. If you noticed, I use the words like worthy and love and happiness, because those are the things that I want you to focus on. I don't want you to focus on sadness or emptiness. Air out what's in your chest as far as memories of that person, good or bad. It also helps when on the other end of the conversation is someone who loves you and respects you, who's going to turn around and say, that's totally normal to feel that way. You're not alone. I care about you. You're going to be okay. Now, if you're someone who just screamed at the idea of having that conversation with someone, or if you don't maybe have close relationships like that, you would probably benefit from seeking professional help. All podcasts are going to say that. But really, as someone who is studying mental health and psychology, I'm always going to recommend professional help. Doesn't necessarily mean that therapy is the way for you. There are such things as death doulas or people who study death and dying as a profession that can coach you through the process, especially if you're not someone who's religiously inclined, that can reach out to a community of people who think similarly. You might benefit more from doing some research as far as how to prepare for death. Maybe you want to have things organized for your family and take that burden out of the back of your mind. Or maybe you're someone who is going through a grieving process and doesn't understand what's the next step to take. Another thing that I recommend is something that I did, which is group therapy. That is finding a community of people that are going through the same thing that you are, whether it's at the same moment or in different stages of their grief. But it was about 10 people that would meet weekly, and we would talk about, in a circle, literally like Alcoholics Anonymous, but Grievers Anonymous, I guess you can call it. We would each talk about our individual story, and what that did, it really just set in stone the unification of, I'm not alone. I feel like I'm alone, and I know that my suffering is individual and different from anybody else's, but everyone is suffering at one point in their life, and everyone can get through it. Just because so-and-so got through it doesn't mean that there's some sort of superhero. Because if you don't have friends, if you don't go to a therapist, and if you're strictly listening to podcasts to make yourself feel better, I'm urging you to talk really nicely to yourself, get out of bed, drink water, eat the food, and just know. You know that in your heart of hearts, you've done some crazy things, you've done some hard things before. And yeah, this may seem like the hardest thing you've ever had to deal with, and it probably is, but that doesn't mean that it's impossible. Nothing out there is impossible. And I know it's easier said than done when you're crying into a pillow for 6 hours straight and you don't even want to brush your hair. You don't even know what day of the week it is. You are a trooper. Look at you, surviving, killing it, doing what you can, drinking that water, washing your face. You're an all-star. Might sound sarcastic at first. You look crazy. You feel crazy, but I promise it helps. It starts out slow. It starts with tears streaming down your eyes. You feel like a failure. You feel like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to get through this. All of that. Yeah. You absolutely have a right to feel those things. I'm not saying they're true. Nope. I'm not going to sit here and call you those things because I don't think they're true. And if you're calling yourself those things, you already fucked up step one. To tell yourself these things and to treat yourself in that way, even through the pain. I know that's easier said than done, but that's how you get it done. Okay, Emily, I woke up, I washed my face, I said the mantra, now what? I called the therapist, I'm doing the things. What? What now? Keep going. Keep going. One day, you will cry 2 hours. Instead of six. One day you'll cry 30 minutes. Or maybe one day you won't cry at all. And you won't even realize it until it's like 6 p.m. and you're like, oh my God, I ate today. I walked outside today. I washed my face. I did all the things. And then slowly but surely you'll notice that you are progressing. And that's why I say go at your own pace. Understand the relationship and the suffering that you are dealing with. Acknowledge why you are suffering. Why does it hurt? Because you love this person? Because this person was bad to you? Because this person took time away from you? What is it that hurt you? Give it the respect and space it had in your life. Close the chapter. Talk about it with whoever necessary when those emotions pop up. And slowly but surely, the tears will go down. They will start to recede because it will be less painful. Like I said, it's not time. It's the investment that you're putting back in yourself. And yes, going outside, getting exercise, eating well, drinking water, all of that helps with grief. The health experts aren't kidding. Mental wellness and physical wellness go hand in hand. Grieving, even at your lowest point, I promise you, you need to take a walk outside. Go outside, get some sunshine, put your legs in motion if you can, and come on. We can do this. Pick yourself back up, and like my mother said, they wouldn't be happy to see you like that. And if it's a lost relationship, do you want future happy you to remember this? Or do you want to remember the day that you picked yourself up out of bed and said, I'm doing this for me, because I can, and because I'm what I have left. The only thing you have at all times is yourself. And if you don't take care of that investment first, you can't take care of anything else. And so when I started with the conversation about my family's suffering, the eye-opening experience was not just the amount of, you know, pain that we were all dealing with and what I had to do, but it was also the eye-opening experience of, you have all this love and that's why you're in pain. And you need to put that love back into yourself. And if I don't take care of myself, I can't take care of my family. I have to be strong enough for myself in my lowest points. So yeah, I had a killer support system, but even in the moments that I felt I was alone, because I was living alone with my partner, and he didn't know what to do, but he was trying. And I pushed him away a lot. I had emotional outbursts a lot. Grief comes with these crazy sporadic reactions. The 5 stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, these look different for everyone. The reactions are different. The length of time for each stage is different. The order is different. I'm not even saying acceptance is the last one. I'm not going to sit here and say that because I can't confirm that. And even studies that have been done for grief, there's no guarantee that everyone even finishes all 5 stages or has the feelings of all 5 stages. Denial can be a multitude of different things. If you have complicated grief, it could be as far as denying that the person is gone and like acting like they're still here. Or if you're in denial about a relationship ending, the same thing, like you treat it as if the relationship continues, and that's obviously not healthy. Neither of them are. Anger, the same. You can be angry with yourself. You can be angry with the person who is no longer there. You can be angry with the boss that let you go. It can be a multitude of different levels of anger, and it can even go as far as violence or emotional outbursts. Bargaining, the idea that you can either do something or convince someone to do something for you in order to make changes that will happen to basically erase reality. Feel that if you legitimately fall into bargaining, you can fall into a different type of spiral, which creates this false reality that you can get them back. And let's focus on moving forward without them versus trying to fix the fact that they're not here. Stage 4 depression. Like I said, depression can come at any point. And acceptance for me looked differently than, you know, what some might assume. Acceptance is the acceptance of reality, that the person is gone, or that I'm not going to be able to do anything to change that, or I can only do so much for my family because I can't do that for myself. That is a form of acceptance. But also accepting happiness back into your life is a different level of acceptance that I feel is necessary. You're not exactly winning the battle against grief because it's a finish line. You're winning the battle against grief because you found the coping mechanisms necessary to make yourself feel better on a regular basis and able to live your life routinely from there. What some people in the psychology community call this is loss adjustment. And I like this term because it doesn't limit what that looks like, what kind of loss that is. And it just means that I've adjusted to the reality. So some people feel, oh, I've grieved and I'm miraculously better and I'm never going to be sad ever, ever again. That's just not the case. You're definitely going to feel, you know, emotional moments, especially if you lost a loved one because of death. You want them around and you have some sort of happy moments or things that you'd like to share with them and they're not there, and it gets a little emotional, but you can remember that energy is always around us and they're really never ever gone. They live in your heart and your mind, with you in soul and spirit. If you don't believe in that kind of thing, know that they have brought you up and taught you things in your life that have led you to where you are. And that is really beautiful. That's also a way to honor their memory and respect those emotions and feelings that you are having, because they do have a place. And if you're worried about continuing memories without them, or that they'll miss out on being a part of it, find a way to make them a part of it. Bring their memory, share their stories, find some sort of tradition that you can pass on, maybe even a name, or just some funny anecdotes. My family, for example, we're passing around a journal for stories of what happy memories we have with my dad. And we're passing it around a few times to the family to see what kind of crazy mess we get. And it's going to be fun. It's just another way to keep the memory alive in a really positive and vibrant way versus trying to sulk in sadness, because you can't change it and there's no need to torture yourself because of it. Now, let's talk about that self-torture a little bit. The rumination of thoughts that come with an anxious mind or a depressed mind, especially in these moments of extreme pain. And more specifically, let's talk about complicated grief. Now, complicated grief is referring to a type of grief that's basically forced to continue. You're trying to heal, you're trying to move forward, but something continues to forcibly bring you back. This can be a toxic relationship that's forcing you to relive painful memories in a way that you're not open to. This can be a legal case. For example, my father's death did require investigation and forced legal action. If you are ruminating in your own mind, that's also a form of complicated grief, although it's not coming from an external factor, it's coming internally. The main thing to remember with these different forms of rumination is recognizing your triggers in what exactly upsets you. The biggest thing is acknowledging the fact that this pain is stemming from something, somewhere, and the reason behind it. Why are you trying to avoid this? Because I don't want to relive this memory. Why don't you want to relive this memory? Because it's painful. Is this something that you are forcing upon yourself, or is this something that someone else is forcing upon you? When it's internal rumination, we can revisit the initial steps that we talked about, but also we want to focus on professional help. You want to try and find the source of that emotional outburst and confront it. Avoidance only makes the problem more difficult, because avoiding your triggers is how we find the emotional outbursts in regular life. Now, when we go to a place of external factors that are forcing your grief to be complex, then we have to internalize what we can and cannot control. Is this someone that we can talk to less? And in this particular instance, avoidance is not the best solution. However, if this is someone that you need to remove from your life, is creating toxic environments to the point of violence or aggression towards you, especially in a moment of grief, it would definitely be best to avoid. If this is coming from someone you love, who you believe you can sit down and have a conversation with, we must identify your triggers as to what exactly is forcing the emotional reaction. That way you're not pointing the finger and blaming the person, but you are acknowledging that you have an emotional reaction to that thing that they are doing. Like I mentioned, my partner, he didn't know what to do. The only way he was able to help me was because I communicated exactly what I needed. Sometimes I needed space. Sometimes I needed him to snuggle. Sometimes I needed a glass of wine. And sometimes I just needed to cry in the corner and be left alone. Those are things that you need to identify within yourself, because that also helps with self-soothing. In these times of complicated grief, you can turn to yourself because your external factors are really outside of your control, especially with like legal cases and things. It takes so long, speaking from experience, it takes such a long time that you have to just respect the process and understand that even if things don't turn out the way that you want to, that doesn't change the course of that history or the course of your future either. Suffering deep loss or having to deal with something very traumatic does not define who you are as a person. It doesn't define the trajectory of your success. Now, when I speak of triggers, I don't just mean the behavior that triggers your emotional response. I'm also speaking of what inside of you is triggering an emotional response based off of someone else's behavior. It is not anybody else's responsibility to be walking on eggshells in order for you to be happy. It doesn't work that way. Even in times of grief, I'm here to tell you that the people who love you the most don't know how to love you exactly how you want unless you communicate that and address exactly why you have issues with certain things being done. Acknowledge the fact that you have those emotional reactions because of something that happened to you, but that does not mean that every time it happens, it deserves that emotional reaction. And that's where complicated grief gets tricky, especially because it's going on for an extended period of time. And if you're forcing it upon yourself, or even if somebody else is forcing it upon you, you then put yourself in a predicament where you can extend those bad behaviors for a very, very long time. What in your grief is forcing those emotional reactions to resurface? Does it merit the reaction that you are giving it? Most of the time, it's no. Most of the time, we can take a step back, count to five, breathe, and say, let me take a few minutes to think about that. Let me breathe. Let me calm down. I'll come back. This can be in your head. This can be out loud. This can be to another person. This can be to just a subject matter in your mind. I need to revisit this when I feel better. As we set boundaries, we can then make the long-term grief less painful because we can find ways to situate those emotions in a healthy way. We know that they exist. We know why they're there. We give them the 5 minutes, and then those boundaries continue to create healthy habits for yourself. You then can be exposed to the things that triggered you previously and internalize them in a way that says, that is not a personal attack on me. I can see that they have said something that's hurtful. I am not okay with it. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about it. Or I saw that hurtfully because of XYZ, but they didn't mean it that way. Let me just take a step back to be sad and salty by myself and we'll come and revisit. You can go cry into a pillow and come back. But that's healthy coping. Understanding the limits of, I don't need to be throwing my shit on everyone around me. Do they merit a conversation about boundaries and respect and love and what you need and how they can help you? Absolutely. Do they need to be yelled at and screamed at and cried at every single moment? No. No, they don't. You are allowed a space to grieve. You are allowed a space to have emotions, but you don't need to force others into volatility or violence because of your grief. And I promise that if you follow coping mechanisms, you can make it so that you don't have to worry about these emotional outbursts on a regular basis. You'll start to see them less and less, and eventually they'll start to subside. The more time that you invest in yourself, the better results you're going to have, and probably the faster your grieving process will be, the sooner you get to loss adjustment, and the sooner you can find some sort of happiness back into your life and well into your future. Grief is really tricky, guys. Each individual person has their own recipe. I want you to find it. But if you follow everything I said, you should be going down the right path. If you need anything, feel free to DM me at Talk About It with Emmy. I'm here for you. I wanted to say a quick happy birthday to Mima Gonzalez. She is Landon's grandmother. Today is her birthday, first birthday away from us, but we wanted to say that we love you. I know you can't hear, but you're always listening. And that's it. Love you guys. Can't wait to talk again soon. Peace out.